This is Dave Snowden. I've got various titles ranging from professor at a complexity center to professional curmudgeon, and I'm not too much fussed which you use. And this is the Agile Uprising podcast.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Agile Uprising podcast. I am this evening's host, Jay Hersko. Joined with me, I have the friendly Texan, Chris Merman.
No, that's Leff. I'm the mean Texan.
Okay, so then the friendly Texan, Andrew Leff.
Yeah, no, but that's okay.
And the world's biggest New York Giants fan, Jason Cusack.
Fuck New York.
All right, so you can all tell we're in the Philly area. So the topic of tonight's conversation is employee versus consultants in transformation work. And this is not an us versus them discussion. It's more of a discussion around how does the experience differ when you're an employee going through an agile transformation, an agile adoption, an agile transmogrification, and what it's like being on the other side versus a consultant. We did do one podcast episode in this series already with a totally different cast and a totally different crew, but there was so much interest, a bunch of us wanted to get together and discuss it again. And I'm going to throw it out there now before I forget. If you listen to this episode and you feel like you have experiences you'd like to share, tips, pointers, please take it to the coalition.agileuprising.com and comment. We would love to have you on. We would love to do another panel episode of guests that are not sitting on the board that have different experiences, because the way we all improve is we learn from each other. So with that said, gentlemen, let's begin. So first of all, let's go around the horn with a quick introduction, and I'm going to start with you, Merman. So give a brief intro as to who you are, what your last or most current transformation role is. Was it as an employee? Was it as a consultant? And let's try to leave the client out of it or the employer out of it. And talk a little bit about your history. How many times have you been through a transformation and which side of the fence? So Merman, I'm starting with you.
So my experience, I've actually seen both sides of the fence. So, I've been an external consultant, coach for the last 3 years or 2.5 years, I guess, maybe 2.5 years. Before that, my first kind of coach role was I got hired at a mobile startup, and the guy that hired me, he knew I had some agile chops, and he said, "Hey, I really want help with, you know, with an agile transformation, but I can't just hire a coach. So I'm going to hire you as like a project manager, and then let's see how it goes, so to speak." And then I spent a year running projects. And then after that, they kind of announced me as, I forget whatever kind of title they called it. It's basically like a process champion, so to speak. I don't know if you all have experienced those inside of organizations, but it was like, hey, if you have a process question or you need, I have like a scrum tie to break, then he's your dude. So I've kind of spent about the same amount of time on both sides of the fence, and it's been really interesting kind of noticing the difference.
Jason, what's been your experience?
Yeah, Jay. So this is going to be a fun show because you were a former client of mine. So you'll be able to give some insights into whether or not I'm telling the truth. But from an experience perspective, so I've been a part of six transformations. Three as a full-time employee and three as a consultant. And the amount of time I've spent is probably split right down the middle, exactly 50-50. Although the first three that I've done were full-time employee engagements. And then the last three I've done have been from a consultant perspective. Are you guys getting weird feedback, by the way?
A little bit, not much, but not much.
Okay, it almost sounds like there's a conversation going on. So,
and for those listeners, we are in the process of trying out a new podcasting system because our previous one was giving us fits. So please bear in mind if we have a little bit of jankiness, we're working through the bugs. Okay, so Jason has 3 and 3. Mr. Leff, how about you?
So I also have been both full-time and consultant. I think without having to do extensive math, I think I've been a part of 5 transformations, 1 as a full-time, 4 as a consultant. So actively working in some way, shape, or form in transformation. So it's been awesome.
Okay. And as for myself, I've been through this is, I'm currently on my third, and unlike everybody else in this call, I have only seen it from a full-time employee perspective. So I've never been the expert brought in, which we'll touch on in a bit. I've never been the expert brought in to provide insight. I've always been the guy who gets the ball, drops it in his lap, and says, go do. So first question I'm going to ask is, might be obvious. Why do organizations engage outside consultants when they're basically trying to redo their organizational culture? And for that, I'm going to start with you, Mr. Leff.
Jeez. I mean, I think it's an understanding of, hey, we want to bring in some, I hate this word, but expertise in the area of, if it's an agile transformation, hey, how do we align the organization to have an agile mindset, whether we're introducing Scrum or SAFe or whatever framework of the week we want to talk about? How do we bring that in-house to hopefully the direction is to anchor change within our current body of employees to carry this forward. And we're going to bring in a hired gun to teach, train, and mentor that effort.
Mervin, thoughts?
Yeah, so I like what I mean, I've used those exact words before. I guess the only addition that I would make is that a lot of times, or at least I don't know if you all have the same experience, those of us that are consultants, is like you come into an organization and all their coaches are kind of people that used to do a different role, and they've kind of grown into, you know, maybe they were Scrum Masters or RTEs, and now they're kind of in a coach role. And so they only have their experience of coaching in their organization. They've kind of been swimming in their own fishbowl for some period of time. And unfortunately, they don't, that's not a like a wealth of knowledge and a depth of understanding. They only know their own dog food, so to speak. And so I see the consultant as, you see what's happening in other organizations and you can compare and contrast what you're seeing, and then we'll find that path forward. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense.
I mean, it's similar to that, but I think the other aspect is the consultant is a change agent, right? Like if you've got really heavy institutional DNA of doing things a certain way, those full-time employees, leaders or not leaders, really is irrelevant, sometimes have a hard time orienting to doing something different and really injecting change. And to me, that's one of the reasons why they do bring in people from the outside to help be that change agent and to not be really encumbered by, you know, just certain outcomes or expectations that may have happened in the past, especially if it's been something that's been failed over and over and over again, right? I think that outside party is really important to maybe do something different and expect different behaviors from people.
Yeah, and to that point, I would say, like, we also have the gumption to speak up and say the things that the internal employees, like, don't quite have the temerity to say because of internal politics. And we speak the truth because all... Mm-hmm. We know we're going to be fired anyways when our contract's done. So, you know, what does it matter if you fire me now? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
true,
a good point.
True. That's a good point. And like Jason said, I was on the receiving end of his coaching expertise. And I do think as the full-time employee who was dealing with an external coach, I think all the reasons you gentlemen gave are relevant. I think you do need someone from the outside to come in and give the unvarnished, unbiased opinion, because, you know, that we've all been places where the running joke is we pay very expensive $600 an hour consultants to come in and tell our bosses what I tell them for $90 an hour. But because they're expensive, they listen. So that definitely does play part of it, where you do go to the, like Andrew said, you go to the outside expertise for real, right, wrong, or indifferent to get that sort of feedback.
All right, real quick aside, what was the most annoying thing about working with Cusack?
I wouldn't say there was anything annoying about him, but he has the dude equivalent, and Jay, I love you to death, he has the dude equivalent of resting bitch face, where he always looks like he's about 40 seconds from choking you out. So you wrap that in the package of a guy who, now that I know him, he's bright and cuddly like a teddy bear. But when this guy comes around the corner and he's in a sweater vest and he's dressed up And he's just got this look in his eye. And now knowing that Jason has taken Krav Maga and he can kill me with any three items that are randomly sitting in my bathroom vanity closet makes him a little more terrifying. But no, I think the hard part was he had this guy who's obviously intelligent, but he looked like he was ready to rip my head off. And then when I started doing shots in that first stand-up, shots of whiskey, it didn't go well. But that's a whole story for a whole other time. That's a story for another time.
All right, your turn, Cusack. What was the most? All right, your turn, Cusack. Give it back to Jay.
Well, I'm surprised. I'm honestly surprised that Hersko didn't say the most annoying thing, where all the practical jokes I used to play on him, like covering his desk and all the unused fantasy football stickers from our draft 1 year. When he was on vacation, there was probably 400 stickers all over his stuff.
I will post pictures with this podcast episode. They use those cheesy stickers that aren't even vinyl, so it left residue. I had to bring in a half gallon of turpentine to clean my desk. Everybody got high that day.
Mayim, to answer that question, I mean, Hersko, I mean, it was quite a journey for us as colleagues and now as friends, because I don't know that we really got off on the right foot. As I recall, the same day that Jay just described, Jay wasn't really part of the stand up. I was really just there to observe and just see. It was one of, I don't know, 30 teams that, you know, we were trying to take a look at. Jay happened to be my first one. And his back was to the stand up. He was being super disruptive. It was almost like he didn't want the stand-up going on, but he also wanted the attention. It was really an odd mix. And then when he pulled out the bottle of whiskey and then started pulling people to do shots at his desk at, I guess it was probably like 9:30 in the morning, I had kind of given him the evil eye of, are you fucking kidding me right now? Are you serious?
That seems so out of character for Mr. Horse Cow.
I'm going to say that was younger me, and I will give the Glomar response in that I can neither confirm nor deny the story that was just reported. So let's talk about the false differential, right? Unfortunately, when you get into these sort of scenarios, and it doesn't need to be just an agile transformation, it doesn't need to be coaching. It could be hiring a third party vendor to do any type of work for you, not even software delivery. There is that false divide of us versus them, right? There is that concept of whereas the coaching consultant gets to come in and say what they honestly think, because they know, to Merman's point, they are getting air quotes fired eventually. There is that part that maybe there's some resentment on both sides. So how do you gentlemen try to get around that? What are your tips and hints to get around that for the betterment of the transformation as a whole? And I'm going to start with you, Lef. What are some of the things that you do to help get people to not see me as a competitor or as a, for lack of a better term, enemy, but more as a coworker trying to get to the same goal?
Wow. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to do that. And I think it's how the consultant is brought in, right? Are they brought in as this unknown stranger that just needs to sit in the corner and, you know, just, hey, who's that guy? You know, organically be incorporated into the organization, or are they set up to say, hey, listen, we're bringing someone in. Their focus is on X, Y, and Z. They're, you know, we really trust that this person has a good insight, blah, blah, blah. You know, are they brought in warm or are they just brought in cold? That would be, you know, so it's two different entry methods. You know, what's the onboarding experience like for a consultant in a coaching role? And the other piece of that is, you know, you have to build relationships with people to get them to even want to engage. So how are you connecting with people to be able to even teach? So we're not just teaching agile, we're teaching people. And how do we continue to practice the building of people and connecting with people so they start to build trust, respect, and they look at you as you're not just there billing, you're actually trying to invest and help the organization with why they brought you in there, which is sometimes always interesting as to why, but it's really building that partnership and having, to me, it's really connecting with leadership and then also connecting with the folks that are doing the work day in and day out, that you're there to support them.
Thanks, Andrew. So Jason, I'm going to ask you a more pointed question. As the consultant, what do you do to get the full-time employee get them to see, and maybe you can replay even our experience, that you're on the same side working towards the same goal. And then Merman, just to give you a bit to get prepared, I'm going to ask you, as a full-time employee, how do you get yourself on the same page as the consultant? But we'll start with Jason.
There you go, Hersko. Okay. So I think what Lef just brought up is a super important point, which is, have you been brought in cold or warm? Because if you're brought in warm, if leadership does their job and says, look, we're going to try to do things different. This is a person that's going to really help us move beyond where we're at today. Whether it's better or not, we'll arrive at that conclusion at some other point. But I trust this person. They are here to help. And they go through the whole litany. That's far different than just showing up one day and being the weird guy that is now part of the team with almost no intro. So I'm going to take the harder one, which is coming in cold, where you don't really have that leadership support, or it's feigned, or it's really just not there. And one of the things that I do, beyond just observing for a little bit, because I think one of the things is you don't want to come on too strong as I have all the answers, because oftentimes we don't have the answers. And we're not even sure what problem we're trying to solve. So what's really important, I think, in my mind is, first, go in, do some observation, and be casual about it, right? Hey, I'm not here to judge you guys. I'm really just here to listen. If you got some questions, feel free to send them my way, but otherwise just kind of ignore me. And then see what other data points you can collect. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that I will then start to pull people aside that look like they're influencers, right? You can typically tell in a group who is the person that is in charge, or who is the person that people look to, as kind of like the leader, the unspoken leader of the group. And I will try to at least have some kind of private conversation with them. And maybe even establish, hey, look, I want to create an accountability board because I'm here to help you. I'm here to serve you. So you're going to tell me all the things that you are worried about, and we're going to put it on my board. We're going to see how many of these things can I help pull off your list of things that you're worried about, or things that make you lose sleep at night, or things maybe you're just aggravated about. I think when you reach out to those types of people that are in those positions, it's really 50-50 hit or miss in the form of, will they give you real stuff and really be honest and vulnerable, or will they blow you off? But that's a pretty good hit rate if you're at least batting 500. And really, you just have to chip away at that facade. If you feel like that person's feeding you lines, then you just have to continue to chip away and maybe figure out who do they trust and start to infiltrate them. But it's a giant game of social chess when you come in cold. And it's to me, it's one of the hardest things, especially coming from the full-time employee perspective, where you are either in charge or have that influence, to going to where you don't have any of it. It is one of the hardest things in my mind, making that transformation from being a part of a group to being kind of the outsider. I'm interested to hear what Merm has to say, though.
Go ahead.
I just want to jump in on something that Jason just said that I think is important, is kind of setting the stage when you go in cold. Is this is how I work, right? Like, you set this is why I'm being quiet. This is why I'm observing. And this is the process that I go through to better serve, to build some transparency around what you're doing and what the process is. So it's not weird or, hey, why is he not saying anything? So you set that expectation up front and you lay out your process when you do come in cold. I think that can help. Of course, it's not a silver bullet, but I think it's important that you go in and you set that up front to set expectations.
Yeah. So Lef, you took part of my point and said it probably better. The agreement that you make, especially with your main stakeholder, right? Like the person that's signing your checks when you come in as a consultant, is super important. Not just, so Lef made a great point about this is what to expect from me and how I work, but also like sitting down with them and saying, what do you think whenever I'm done, what will success look like to you? What are some outcomes, behaviors, and or things that you feel like, regardless if they're the ones that we actually do, what do you think success looks like? Because so often they just pay for us consultants to come in and they say, do the scrum or do the safe, or now it's just like bland general, do the digital transformation piece, right? And you just get stuck on these transformation teams. And they just throw that at you without any expectations. You don't know what they're expecting, and you start just swinging wildly in the dark, and you don't end up like delivering anything. So it doesn't help you out if you are going to come in, regardless of whether you're warm or cold, if you don't set that working agreement up front, that's a big IC Agile coaching technique, which is that social contract. Because if you don't set it, it's going to be hard to be successful no matter how good you are. But I come down where CUSAC is. I love coming in cold. I just play dumb, and I know that opens it up for jokes about me being dumb always, but I love playing dumb because it just allows me to like experience everything for the first time.
So I was going to go with a joke about you beat me to it, self-deprecating humor about playing dumb versus actually being dumb. So the cold intro piece, I wasn't expecting that answer from any of you guys. And that really does strike a nerve because we have all worked, at least most of us have worked for the same, in the same area, general vicinity of a company where a contracting company, a consulting company was brought in, not an individual coach, but a consulting company was brought in and then pitched to the full-time employees as they're smarter than you. They have a totally different skill set. And that's a whole different topic for a whole different podcast, but it actually did serve to poison the well. And at that point, you could have brought in, you could have had Martin Fowler, Kent Beck, and Jeff Patton sitting there teaching us how to do user stories and code and XP practices, and nobody would have listened because at that point they were insulted. So for you potential future leaders out there, don't insult your current employees by comparing them. Never compare one employee to another, but don't insult your current employees by saying the vendor is better.
But I also
go on.
I'm always the inner. You should change my name to Horse Cow. I'm the interrupted cow, but moo. It's just a matter of two is setting expectations of what the, you know, if you're coming in as a coach, what that role is, right? And Jason is the king of analogies, but if I have to take a stab at it, to me, he says, you know, I no longer take snaps, right? Like I'm the coach. I no longer take snaps on the football field. But to me, it's like if the football team is losing the game, you don't see the coach run out on the field, throw pads on and start playing every position. So it's setting the expectation that we don't own the problems. We have a lens that we can use to help you identify those problems and work through some methods and training and understanding of how to align to a goal that might be to resolve that problem or expose it further. But we don't own the problem, right? And it's empowering and getting the organization to understand that. And this is where being a consultant can be a challenge because we're not empowered to make those decisions. So we need to fuel the people that should be making those decisions to start owning and practicing and really anchoring that, you know, for to be buzzworthy is anchoring that change to those individuals to carry it forward. We should be coaching ourselves out of a role.
Yeah. So can I ask a clarifying question? So I want to make sure I understand. Are you saying that the internal coach has, would you say that they have more skin in the game than the consultant coach, or?
I always struggle with what a full-time coach does, but so I'm not sure how to answer that. I think the organization, if it's somebody that is going to be a full-time coach, to me, we should all be full-time coaches, right? Everyone should be coaching at some point and mentoring. But you know, I don't want to go off on that tangent, but I don't know the role of a full-time coach, what that means.
So thanks for bringing that up, Merman, because that actually segues perfectly into where I wanted to go next. So those of you who are familiar with the author Nassim Taleb, Black Swan, Fooled by Randomness, Anti-Fragile, he just put out a book called Skin in the Game. And it talks a lot about how people make decisions differently when they have skin in the game versus when they don't. And then he goes into a little bit of a philosophical discussion about what skin in the game actually is. He talks about the intellectual yet idiot. I think I've sent a bunch of articles over to a bunch of guys. So, to your point, Lef, about what does a full-time coach do and then having skin in the game, I had a conversation in my current transformation with a couple other people, all of us being full-time employees. And the remark was made about, oh, well, these coaches can just show up and tell us what we should do and they can preach the gospel to us. And then they go and they don't have any skin in the game. And I actually was on the other side of that argument. And I said, well, wait a minute. I said, think about it. If we hire, it's the same with any vendor. You hire a vendor to show up and do a thing, right? No matter how realistic or unrealistic your expectations are. If they don't meet those expectations, you end up bad-mouthing them and say, oh, well, this is a typical consultant. They didn't have any skin in the game, blah, 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 blah. Whereas I would argue that as consultant coaches coming in to help run a transformation, the skin in the game is your reputation. And it's like organizational or institutional trust, where it takes a lifetime to build it up and a real quick minute to lose it. And all it takes is one totally muffed experience with enough people badmouthing you. And I think it actually is we've all heard of the consultant company, you know, joke that they bring in their rock stars. Those guys are there for guys and gals are there for a couple of weeks. Things start get going, and then they miraculously start swapping out for the B and C tier players. So I would argue that coaches, consultant coaches, do still have skin in the game. The skin being the reputation and the way they earn their living, being backed up by their skills that they sold themselves for to come into the building. Does that make sense, or am I crazy?
Yeah, no, it does make sense. So how I receive that is, I guess what I'm hearing in that, Jay, is the way that that manifests itself for me is, and I'm just using all these stupid cliches, is right now, usually when I get brought in, we have clients that they have internal coaches because, you know, external coaches or whatever, or hiring people off the street that have coaching experiences are really expensive. And so they just elevate these scrum masters into these, like, I mean, they call them coaches, but we can argue about what does it mean to really be a coach, but they take them through training. I mean, I even got my current client, I got sent a spreadsheet of this person has SPC training. This person has agile team coaching training. This person just has agile experience kind of. And it's like, they have them like ranked and quadrantized and stuff. And like, so I come in and it's like, well, you have training. We have all the training, but we've never done this stuff before. You have training and you actually have done it. And so what I end up doing is coaching the coaches. And so to your point, Jay, about having skin in the game, my skin in the game is making sure that the coaches are successful and less focused on the success of the programs and teams, because that's kind of the full-timer's job. And they're kind of, I hate to say held accountable, but because they're full-timers, they're kind of sort of held accountable for it. And then I come in and just enable them. I give them tools. I coach them one-on-one or whatever. And then I, you know, I do my time there and go, okay, cool. Well, let me know when y'all want me to come back.
Jason Cusack, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, I've been thinking about this, and I spend a lot of time really trying to orient myself around who does have more skin in the game. And I think it's a perception thing. If you come in as a, quote, consultant, and you treat people the way a consultant could treat you by just telling them all the things they haven't done right, and really not being engaging, then people will perceive that you don't have skin in the game. That this is really just another one of 100 different clients you're going to be at over the next 10 years. And it really doesn't matter to you whether they're successful or not. Right. But if you could come in with that same exact title and be authentic about what you think you can help offer to people. And I've seen this through every place I've been. I mean, I've walked into day one with a group of virtual strangers and left after 18 months with people that I consider friends that I talk to on, you know, every couple months just to find out how things are going, right? I mean, there's a huge difference in perception. And in that case, where people believe you're authentic, they see you as having skin in the game, and they see their success as being your success. And when that happens, then it really is irrelevant whether you're a consultant, a full-time employee, whatever it happens to be. It's that people perceive you as part of the team because of how you've treated them. So to me, that's kind of how I see it. And I've seen really both sides of that coin too. I've seen people come in and really kind of be destructive in certain instances where they won't really offer any type of advice because they really don't want to be there. And that's really evident the second that happens. Or people come in with huge arrogance about, I've got all this figured out, and these are all the things you guys haven't done. In fact, at one of our clients, I happened to see one of those decks come out of the top 35 things that you need to change, right? It was just kind of laughable, because it's like,
you've got to be shitting me.
No, dead serious. Dead serious. And Merman, it was like 200 slides, right? So when you put that stuff in front of people and they see that, they go, wow, one, I'm not good enough. Two, this is overwhelming. Three, I hate you now. You're a piece of shit. Four, you haven't really helped me do anything other than identify all the things I'm bad at. five, I feel like we're married now, right? Like there's like a whole like a mindset that people run through when they see stuff like that, as opposed to the incremental improvement. Hey guys, let's just pick the one thing, right? Whether it's a program level, whether that's an enterprise thing you can't go solve that you want me to go take bullets for you on, funding teams over funding projects. Maybe it's an SDLC governance thing. Maybe it's a how do we automate our documentation? Like what is the thing that's really going to save you guys, you know, just the mind numbing headache that you're going to get from that. And when you take that thing on and tackle it to the ground and even make it marginally better than where it was before, people respect that, right? And they don't see you as you have a colored badge or you have a consultant badge or you're a part-time temp guy. They just don't see it that way, right? Because you've helped deliver. But you have to take that first step. You have to be able to deliver in order to even get that first ounce of respect that, wow, this person is really, really is a part of our team and we should treat them the same way we would treat an internal team member.
Yeah, so I think something else that builds on that, Jason, is around the fact that we overcomplicate things. Like you're coming in as a consultant, you're already feeling like there's some expectation. Like if we just go back to the golden rule, right? Treat people as you would like to be treated. If a consultant comes in and starts providing all this direction and doesn't really build that relationship or establish that trust or connection, no one enjoys that. If you're at consultant, I don't like the consultant coming in and doing that. So I think it's important that we go back to the human nature aspect of it is, you know, the golden rule, treat people the way you want to be treated. So if that doesn't, you know, we should be resonating with people in that way, not just, you know, throwing the Bible at them and beating them over with it, you know, beating them over the head with it all the time. It's just,
whoa, where did the Bible come into this?
Yeah, it's a metaphor.
Just thought it was really interesting. We took a left turn through Bibliotheca, even though that's not the Bible.
That's the Bible. Is that better?
Fair enough.
Yeah, very much.
So now let's get to some suggestions, right? So if you, I'm going to go around the horn with the first question. If you, as a consultant, had to offer a piece of advice to a full-time employee, when you're going in together with a transformation, what piece of advice would you give them in order to help that transformation be more successful and to avoid that us versus them divide? And I'm going to start with you, Chris Merman.
I'm not going to lie. I was sending a text just now. Can you say the question again?
This makes for great podcasting.
I'm going to be honest for once.
So if you are a consultant, coach or whatever, and you're giving advice to a full-time employee to say, hey, this is how you're going to make, if you do these sort of things, if you keep these things in mind, we'll both be more successful together. What advice would you give them?
So it really depends on who they are. I mean, everybody that I respect that, you know, that coaches, either coaches, internal coaches or coaches, just, you know, the people that we're coaching every day, right? That rapport is a, you know, it's a huge piece of that. Like them seeing you as, hey, I'm not here for any, I can't get any glory, right? Cause I'm the consultant, right? I'm here for a paycheck. Yes. But also like, this is what I do for a living and just getting to know them and what motivates them. I find that, I've heard many stories. I just got back from San Diego Agile 2018 and I heard lots of stories of, friends brought the internal coaches that they spend time with. And they, all of the stories were like, oh, you know, he or she spent time with me and got to know me and didn't just get straight to business, that it was about, and also asked me what I wanted to learn, what I was passionate about. And also what Cusack said about, you know, hey, I'm just here. Don't pay attention to me. I'm just watching, right? Like, and I know that can seem really judgy just to feel observed, because I've felt observed before and I know how that feels. So I just try to make it seem like, you know, I just play on my phone or I just write down taking, you know, I don't take notes and I don't do anything that makes it seem like, oh, I'm keeping records for forever. Right. It's just a matter of like, hey, this is what I saw, or what do you think happened? And if I stick to what their observations are, then I have a better chance of not hurting their feelings. Not that it's impossible or that I probably will eventually hurt their feelings somehow, because I'm going to have to say, no, that's bad, don't do it. But I don't know if I'm answering the question. I really feel like it starts with acknowledging them as a person and acknowledging where they are in their journey and just saying, okay, well, if you want to take a step forward, I'd love to pair with you.
Perfect. Perfect. Andrew, same question.
Yeah, so I guess transformation is just such a huge thing. So if you're trying to work with an individual to give them advice, is really to become a better listener, to observe and really help people, and don't expect change to happen around you, lead the change, and giving them tools, techniques, and methods on how they can experiment and lead change and be okay with, you know, the saying that we all say is fail fast, right? But learn faster. So keep sharpening the axe, keep practicing. You're learning, or you're looking to run a marathon, and you can't run a marathon if you've never run in your life the first time at the gate, but you can train to run that marathon. So it's really understanding how can you better serve them to get where they're looking to go, and maybe redirect them in some way to get them to understand how to start to spark transformation to become almost viral within the organization. So they're changing, even though people around them might not be changing. So they're doing something different that may get other people to notice, well, maybe now I need to do something different.
Perfect. Perfect. Jason?
Yeah, I like both those answers. Both what Merman and Left said really resonate with approaches I've seen be successful in these orgs. I mean, for me, when I talk to a full-time employee, one of the things that I tell them is, you know, hey, this is a great opportunity for you to take some risks. You want to know why? Because if the risks don't work out, you can blame me, and I will take every bullet. And I've got your back on this. I'll get the air cover that we need. And I'll make sure that any of these failures that tries to stick to you doesn't, right? I'll take full responsibility for that. But in turn, what I need your help with is I need to understand the org chart. I need to take from your head your experiences through the last however many years you've been here and bring it to my head, right? Allow me to, allow yourself to be vulnerable so I can truly coach you. But at the same time, I need you to be the change agent. I can spark it, but I can't be the person that sustains it, right? Because if I sustain it, I've now become part of the system. And one of the analogies that Left and I've been talking about that you brought up earlier is, as a coach, right? I don't take snaps. I'm calling the plays. And in which case, when the play is successful, it's a player's success, not the coach's. But when the play isn't successful and for whatever reason, it's deemed as a failure, that's a coach's problem, right? So when you talk to these FTEs, one of the things that I have seen that they get, maybe excited is not the right word, but they respect the fact that you're going to put yourself between them and some of the people that are going to be upset that maybe this didn't go the way that they thought it was going to go, or from a leadership perspective, they want someone to blame. I am always the first one that takes that accountability. And that also helps breed that trust. And you can say those things, but you have to do those things in order to get that trust. So I love it when people feel comfortable taking risks.
I love that. I love how you worded that, Cusack. And I go one step further. I tell them some of these things will not go well, so don't expect them all to go well, right? I just couch it right in the very beginning. Like, you know, my standard answer is like my first iteration, it's going to suck. And what you're going to demo doesn't feel like much, but you need to let it be that way. And that's okay, right? One other thing I'd like to point out is something that's been an internal once upon a time is I had someone that I knew personally in the Agile community locally come. He did kind of like a really long lunch and learn, and then sat around for some Q&A afterwards. And a lot of people were basically asking a lot of the questions that I get asked when I'm internal to the org. And at first I was kind of upset, like, I told these people the answer already. Why are they asking him, kind of a thing? And it was really interesting perspective. But what I will add to the story is, before he ever did the lunch and learn, he showed up early because he knew I worked there. He showed up early and was like, hey, come sit with me. And we sat in the room for an hour and a half. And he's like, what are you seeing? What are you hearing? What are you observing? And what I didn't know at the time that I know now as a consultant, like, you got to put that through a certain kind of BS filter, right? Because I'm giving my own spin on it. I've got my own personal bent against, as an internal employee, why things are happening the way they are and who's to fault or who's at fault or to blame for things. And so he was kind of putting it through his filter. But what I noticed is he was kind of giving us the answers that I'd already given. And what I didn't realize at the time was like, he was adding to my credibility. And also he flat out said, no, I know Chris has told you all this before. Like, why are y'all, you know, what? And he just kind of was, cause he got the same question like three times. He's like, I know Chris has given you all this answer before. What is your specific struggle with that answer? Kind of a thing. And I really loved that. I've tried to remember that as an external coach, is that those internal folks can give you such golden nuggets, and you can also really pump them up by just saying, yeah, what he said or what she said. You know what I mean?
But I think also you have to set expectations that realistic, right? So when we talk about transformation, like let's say a company's been in operation for 30 plus years. It's taken 30 plus years to build that culture. Why on earth would you think in a month you're going to be able to change it, right? So it's setting realistic expectations. If we're truly invested in changing the culture, we need to get there incrementally, but we can't do it all at once. I mean, it's building that partnership to align to say, yeah, we want to change culture, but what are we willing to do to start that conversation? And how are we willing to, like Jason was saying, go out on a limb and take risks to show that it's okay, right? We're not going to be successful 100% of the time. That's okay. And the organization has to support and help people understand that as long as we keep trying and keep practicing and we're transparent about it and showcasing what we're failing, but this is what we've learned from that failure and we're going to do something different based upon that experience, it does build that momentum. And I think that's where consulting can be really powerful, right? So we can accelerate that because we can look at it differently. Because we are bringing an outside lens. We don't have that culture ingrained in us from the organization because we haven't worked there for years.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. I think Jason talked about before about questions and answers. And as this is sort of a weird scenario because you have the coach and the coachee on the same phone call. I think the thing that the advice that I would give, and this could go from a contractor to a full-timer and from a full-timer to a contractor, think about it. And it's the thing that Jason said to me that really helped me tip over into the point where I got it and I started to embrace it. And then it really worked out was I was frustrated about something. I don't remember what it was. And I was looking for answers. And it was one of those arguments like you sort of have with your wife where your spouse answers one thing and then they can't answer it. And then you ask another question, you ask another question, you start dogpiling on. And Jason actually said to me, and I'll never forget this. He said, look, I know you're aggravated because you have all these questions and you want all these answers. And some of them I have and a lot of them I don't, but we're going to learn and discover the answers together. And that still rattles around in my head to this day. And it's a line I've used in anybody I've coached or anybody I've even advised with when it comes to trying to make decisions, especially in regards to the transformation is, look, we don't have all the answers. We can learn it together. And that was a giant, for me personally, that was a giant weight off my shoulders because it made me realize that we don't need to have all the answers right up front. We can figure it out as we go and that's okay. You know, the whole be iterative, fail fast, small chunks, yada, yada, yada. And that for me, I think was the line that really resonated to the point where I'm like, okay, now I get it. Let's just go and do and figure it out as we go along.
The way that I say that, I think what I'm going to say means sort of the same thing, but I always tell people, I know tools and I mean, I, you know, like coaching tools and team tools and tricks and I know frameworks. So if I'm brought in as a framework expert, you know, like I know Scrum, but I don't know you all, and every framework impacts a group of people differently. So I don't know exactly, I know this framework, but I'm not sure how it's going to affect you. So you all bring your knowledge of your company. And then I bring my knowledge of this framework And then we pair our brains together and we'll eventually figure out the direction to go.
That's a good point. Well said. Well said. Gentlemen, we're quickly approaching time. So I'm going to go around the horn for some final thoughts. And I'm going to start with you, Jason.
Final thoughts. Well, I think first, this has been an awesome conversation. I mean, this to me, I wish I had access to this conversation like 8 years ago, when I was going down this path of trying to be a consultant. Because I remember my first day doing this, and I felt like such a pretender walking into an organization with them looking to me to have all those answers. And to your point, Jay, you know, I don't remember that specific conversation, but I do remember investing so much time just working with you and learning about some of the things that you were challenged with. There was a lot of leadership problems at that particular organization. And we tag team things and we said, what is beneficial for both of us, right? Like, what are the things that we can tackle together? That's a win-win that, you know, makes our life a little less complex at the end. And to me, you know, this, if there's anyone that's listening to this, that would like to talk more about these things, even privately, I mean, to me, this is so important. And one of the reasons why I'm so proud to be part of this Uprising initiative, which is we get to really help other people get through some of these tough times, because on that day one as a consultant, it is a tough time, right? It is not easy going in there, especially because a lot of times people will chip away at that facade and try to figure out what you really do know, challenge you with stuff that they found on the internet that you're like, I don't even know if that's true. If I say it's not true, does that make me look like an idiot? Like, there's all kinds of crazy things that happen when you jump into this space. So to me, as a final thought, you know, I would really love to hear some feedback about this particular session and hear what other people have to say, other tips and tricks. And maybe that's something that we try to collate together, which is, you know, what are the things that we can do to help build that trust in those relationships and take that whole us versus them conversation out of it from the start? Because we all do have a vested interest in seeing this be successful. Consultants from a reputation perspective, but also collectively as a group of practitioners, just because we're prideful in what we do and we want to do the best we can.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason. Andrew.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much just want to echo what Jason said, but along those lines is really getting a level of understanding of how to utilize a consultant and how to have a consultant engaged in the organization and really understanding that the power of being a consultant can be used in many different ways, as well as the power of the employee consultant partnership could change the landscape of things. So when you do partner with people that are full time and the consultant's just not coming in branded with a scarlet letter as consultant, that it does create that skin in the game, and it does change the way people view the hired gun mentality. So I think the investment is important. Continue to get that message out there and have consultants practice in that way could help people like us that going cold and a lot of times into really challenging situations, not to have to own everything, right? It's really showcasing, listen, you guys own this at the end of the day. It's for you to succeed or fail and continue to drive forward. If that's the desire, utilize the skills that are in here that are being brought in, where the knowledge that just being tapped in from the outside to help you do that.
And last but not least, Mr. Merman.
So I was, as I was telling the story of when I was an internal employee, you know, the consultant coming in and kind of spending some time with me, I was kind of reminded of a conversation I had today with the internal coach's boss. We were kind of walking to lunch together, and he's kind of telling me about some things, asking my thoughts. And I always start with, I thought I knew what I was doing when I was first doing this as an internal employee. I thought I was, you know, I don't know if you all can resonate this, but at one point in time, I thought that I was hot shit when I wasn't really. I mean, maybe I had some chops or had some stuff. But I didn't have the experience yet and the time in the saddle. So I always try to place myself. I always tell stories of how I thought I knew what I was doing, just to kind of remind myself, hey, they're kind of where you were, or they're where you were in a different way. And it's really okay. Right. I mean, you know, they have some enthusiasm that I maybe have a little bit less of because I've been doing it longer, but I just have to remind myself, like, I had to come from somewhere, and regardless of how shitty or good I am at my job now, like, I had to spend some time to get where I'm at, and just kind of remember that and have some empathy for the internal folks that they're just trying to do as hard as they can with the political climate and the internal red tape, as Lef was talking about earlier. They can only do so much because they don't know another way to work. And so just give empathy to them and then, like, just have fun with it.
Awesome. Thank you, Chris. Well, gentlemen, we're just about time. So on behalf of myself, I want to thank you, Jason, Chris, and Andrew for joining us this evening. To our listeners, I hope you enjoyed this conversation. And please check us out on coalition.agileuprising.com. Feel free to jump in the conversation, offer your feedback. What did we get right? What did we get wrong? What other suggestions would you make? If you'd like to be a guest on a future podcast episode with this or any other topic, please let us know. We're always looking for a new topic of conversation and new guests to have. Once again, you can find us everywhere. Podcasts are listened. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive review, as it does help. Once again, on behalf of the listeners.
Patreon. Don't forget about Patreon.
Yes, we do have a Patreon still out there. I think it's patreon.agileuprising.com. Whole bunch of stuff pretty much everywhere social media can be accessed until President Tweet Goblin turns it off. So once again, on behalf of all the listeners, I want to thank you, gentlemen. And on behalf of us, I want to thank all of you listeners. And until next episode, thank you much.